Today, it is the third month, the fifth day. It is Thursday, March the 4th, and I want to welcome you to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. That was Ruben Blades, or some people call him Ruben Blades, but Blades, salsa singer, songwriter, actor, jazz musician, lawyer, and 1994 presidential candidate in Panama with his famous Patria, or Homeland, featuring Salsa Octavio and Son del Solar. We have a development. Our guest today, we're going to be talking about Venezuela, and just learned from our guest that the connection on her end is just not working. So we will try to reschedule her. It was going to be a very, very important thing, and just these things happen. You know, they just happen. So our guest is probably not going to be able to join us today. And we will reschedule her to talk about Venezuela and crisis. Hopefully we can do that very, very soon. It is an urgent matter to discuss because we may just be seeing an unfolding of a coup in the hemisphere. This is not the first time that this has been a development in Venezuela, and this is why we wanted to talk with her. Her name is Eva Gollinger. She is and has been an advisor to the government and the previous government also of Hugo Chavez. So we just developed a problem, a technological problem, but that is solvable. We can always reschedule. So I'll take this break. I'll go back to Plan B and just communicate with her in the meantime and let her know that we will reschedule her and we will have enough time so that you can understand intimately what is going on. And don't be surprised. A lot of these things that happen, they appear to be technological problems, but the same way that PRN recently had a technological problem, just after Gary did a five-hour special on vaccines, the entire system was attacked and crashed, and basically the system is being reconstituted even as I speak. These things happen, and they are very often politically oriented, and they are meant to signal that there are people who disagree with what you do. So I wouldn't be surprised if this technological problem that we have developed with our guest is of that order. But we will reorganize. We will get her to reschedule She has very important information to share with us. She is uniquely situated to give us an authoritative point of view of what is going on inside of Venezuela. So I ask your indulgence for a little bit of patience, and we will reschedule. We'll take this break and come back, have for you an opinion. It's going to rattle some people about the Justice Department's decision yesterday. So right after this break, we come back and we will continue. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. We've developed a technological issue. Our guest is available, but simply cannot connect with us. She is Eva Gollinger. She has been, as I said, an advisor both to the Chavez and to the government of Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela. And she is going to be rescheduled so that we can appreciate from her having this unique vantage point with respect to what's going on in Venezuela. We'll be able to appreciate the whole scenario that is unfolding. But in the meantime, I want to talk about this development yesterday. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, on his way out from the Obama administration and onto a new life, decided, and you know, this was not surprising at all. We predicted it here on PRN.FM, on Lead Stories. We told you exactly what was going to happen. In the case of Michael Brown and in related cases as regards the function or the alleged function of the U.S. Department of Justice. So the report was issued, and it became the story. The story became the report. This report by the Justice Department that found that the police department of Ferguson, Missouri, essentially was engaging in all manner of racially repugnant practices, both within the department and certainly outside, because it visited its racist attitudes and practices upon the people of Ferguson, Missouri. The department, we should remember, is at the time composed of 53 police officers, only three of whom were African American, despite the fact that Ferguson, Missouri is overwhelmingly African American. And the report was issued really, in the first instance, to address the matter of, quote, distrust, unquote. Distrust. You may recall that Eric Holder had adopted this as a theme. When people are talking about racism, trenchant racism, that in so many ways, on so many occasions, was deadly, lethal, life-threatening to citizens. This is what people were talking and complaining about. The retort was, it is a matter of distrust. So you see how these things work. A legitimate complaint, and it's very clear what the complaint has been, racism, but racism that was having not only inordinate impact and effect, but lethal impact and effect, and not just in Ferguson, Missouri. But since Ferguson, Missouri was the locale that precipitated this national and even international concern about the relationship of the police to the citizens, and particularly citizens of color of the United States, this is where Eric Holder starts. But we already have, from the very beginning, this transmutation occurring. People are talking about the fact that we are being killed. We are being killed needlessly, and we are being killed consistently. And the report, the attitude that informed the report was, this was to be done to address this distrust. See, now the blame comes back to the same community complaining. You are distrustful of the police. So let's take a look at that, shall we? So they did take a look at it. And what did he find? He found that the police department of Ferguson, Missouri, essentially was acting like a shakedown operation for the city. They inordinately fined African Americans for small things, for traffic infractions, for all kinds of small things, for which a fee or a fine was the immediate justice. So in other words, the people of Ferguson were looked upon as a ready resource to supplement the local budget. Now, the police department used dogs. Everybody who was bitten by a dog of the police department, the canine unit, was African American. And it was on and on. To be very honest, I find these things... It is frustrating, and to some degree, it is insulting that in 2015, we are regarding the elements of this report as if this is something so new. In fact, Wolf Blitzer on CNN he kept using the word stunning. This is a stunning report. And Marc Morial of the Urban League, and we have the NAACP, and they're all commenting about the stunning findings of this report. What is so stunning about it? It is stunning. What is stunning, and what became absolutely clear from Eric Holder on down to all of these organizational heads who were stunned by this report, what was stunning was the degree to which these folks had been so completely unconnected from the communities that they supposedly have a vested interest in representing and advocating for. Because nothing really in the report itself is stunning. Not if you are in regular contact with the black community. Not if you are involved intimately with the African-American community. None of this is stunning. This is par for the course. Maybe with a little difference here and a little difference there, but the story is the same. all over the United States. So now we have another layer of insult. We have a demand to address the murder of a young man by a police officer being transmuted into this whole, under this theme of we have to find out what accounts for the distrust of African Americans with regard to police. And now that we've found the statistical evidence to back up everything practically that they're saying, and we learned even more that in some cases they were actually underestimating the problem. But it is stunning. These are stunning findings. So you have to ask yourselves, if this is stunning to the NAACP and to the Urban League and to the Justice Department, and you remember just yesterday I referred to Eric Holder going back to the case of Amadou Diallo. All right? So this is nothing new to him. This kind of scenario shouldn't be so stunning. But it is stunning how completely disconnected these people are, and how they have moved the discussion away from where it ought to have been. But at the same time they deliver this report, and the report now, a compliant press, a compliant media, is now focusing on the report as the story. The story still is, there is a dead young man. Dead for no particular reason. Killed by a police officer who has been able to walk away from these charges. That's the story. It still remains the story. But now they're telling us the story is the report. And with the issuance of this report, Eric Holder gets a wonderful little opportunity to make a graceful exit, as if he has accomplished something great for civil rights. He gets to exit stage left very gracefully, off the main stage and on to part two of his post-Justice Department life, probably looking into being a partner at a very large law firm, probably being courted to sit on the boards of some major corporations, probably, you know, just writing a book that will praise everything he has done so far. But there is no justice. That's the point. The point is there is no justice in this case upon which this so-called report was predicated. So at the same time he gives you something, that's the other part that becomes very offensive. They knew long ago where this was going to go. I told you that. Alton Maddox took great pains. We told you that right here. This was a done deal early in the game. But he wants to make a graceful exit. So you have a report that tells you how much work had been done. By the way, they're telling you this as if this was supposed to be a special assignment. This is the job of the Justice Department. This is not something, a great favor that you're doing. This is a job. And all of these stunning results were readily available from day one. Because as the head of the Justice Department keeps these figures. They have the authority. And their job is to monitor the police departments across the country. That is supposed to be within their purview. But in carefully choreographed propaganda fashion, they rounded up all the blacks, the black leaders, who will now congratulate this Justice Department and Eric Holder particularly, on a job well done. He told us about dog bites in Ferguson, Missouri. And CNN and others are now talking about the report as the story. Well, today, we see that the attorney for the family, Anthony Gray of Ferguson, Missouri, is now threatening to sue Darren Wilson, the police officer. So we have a compounding here of insults. And let me walk you through my reasoning. From the very beginning, you will recall that we spent a lot of time here on Lead Stories explaining to you the lack of proficiency on the part of the legal representatives in this case. And in fact, there was a compounding of error because they did not approach this case in the manner that it should have been approached. This was a fight. We kept saying that. This is a huge fight in a court of law. They didn't have the capacity to do it. And as it turned out, neither did they have the interest in doing it. Because it meant that they would have had to take, from the very beginning, an entirely different tact as warriors in a court of law, but they don't have it, so they couldn't produce it. So in the breach, and as it turned out, in collusion with the government, they allowed the government to just set the pace. Because enters Al Sharpton, who brought in the attorney, Benjamin Crump, from the beginning, to represent the family. And they decided that this case, which clearly is a class action, they decided to treat this case as personal injury case. And they corrupted from the very beginning, they corrupted the situation of this case, how to situate this case to make sure that they set a legal precedent here for how these kinds of cases are to be fought. All of this energy of the community, of the nation, of the international community as well. Everybody was clear that the issue here was justice, not money, but justice. And in order to secure justice, you had to have an entirely different approach, an entirely different attitude. You had to have the capacity to do that, and they didn't have it. And they didn't want to have it either, because that's a lot of work. That is a lot of work. So they bring in Al Sharpton, whose job it was to mollify an outraged community and society. Play ball. Nobody was asking for a special prosecutor. And you don't ask for a special prosecutor by yammering in front of a microphone. You get a special prosecutor when you compel the state to do so, and that requires a pitched battle in a court of law. But you have to walk in there with credentials, and you have to walk in there with a dedication to the larger issue, which is justice. And on those two counts, they failed miserably, and they failed willfully. This was a willful act to sabotage their own case. So the government read it right. We have people clamoring for justice. We have Al Sharpton instead telling them it's about bringing souls to the polls, because the Democratic Party used him and he used them, you know, like regular prostitutes, how they do it, quid pro quo. Rather than me leading a fight for justice, I'll talk about it, but I ain't going to do anything about it. But I do need to be paid. And the exchange was clear. Sharpton gets to go to the White House frequently and hobnob with the hobnobbables. He's cleaned up sufficiently to be presented to an incredulous community as a credible figure. He's looked upon as a leader, finally. And white America now engages in intentional ignorance and conveniently sets aside all the things that they used to say about him. He's now okay. So okay that he is now absolutely ensconced in the media, just along with them. He is not about to hurt any chances of his so-called progress. So the first weakening and dilution of the thrust of this case occurred right inside the case itself. The lawyers and Sharpton, who brought in the lawyers. And all this time that people are in the streets, all that clamoring for justice was about the big bucks at the end of the tunnel. Nobody has filed a brief yet challenging the state to do anything. All about news conferences and pandering to the media. Because the vested interest here was to never allow this case or any other case in which an African American or Latino man who tend to be the prototypical victims of this kind of crime, and white police officers who tend to be the prototypical executioners in these instances. This case was never to become an example of how the law can force the state to actually deliver justice. Nothing. Nothing was filed. No papers, nothing. Lots of news conferences. And the hope was, and it worked. It worked. The hope was, with all this attention, what it does is it increases Al Sharpton's, I should say, necessity within the political structure as a mollifier of black rage over injustice. And it certainly increases the profile of the lawyers as the go-to guys. Hey, your son got killed, call us. We good. We could get you a lot of money. And, of course, we'll take 33%. And that is the extent of their definition of justice. And here we have absolute agreement with the government. They have no interest in having anybody score victories over them on the matter of justice. So they all agreed. We are not going to pursue this matter on a legal level with an eye toward justice, because it means that the state will have to suffer a defeat. It means that the police and the police unions across the country are going to be angry with the state. It means that you have to embarrass political people who are the ones delivering your bread. So everybody plays ball. And Michael Brown becomes an emotional pull. When you want to manipulate people, oh, Michael Brown. And that's where this comes from. That's where this whole thing comes from. This choreography was all done to produce the predicted result, which we told you. We told you this. So don't run around today, after the release of this report, getting all excited about the stunning contents. This was stunning news 10 years ago. It was stunning news 30 years ago. It's not stunning. It's stunning only if you have been completely unhinged from the reality of life within the black community. not only in Ferguson, but across this country. Only if you have no connection to these communities, only if you have no understanding of how people are living day to day, will this be stunning to you. What is the issue here is that we come full circle with the question of what are we willing to tolerate? And we see time and again in every fight, in every legitimate fight, we have turncoats. We have people who are working a whole other agenda and trying to tell you and trying to convince you to come aboard. But you are needed only as you're an extra on the set, on the movie set. It's like two people are in a room, but only one of them knows that the other will be killed. That's what this is. And we certainly should take this again. I don't know what it would take for people to understand that their behavior ought to be different. There is a need to call these people out and publicly cancel their credentials. So-called credentials. You don't speak for the black community, Al Sharpton. You're not our leader. We don't recognize you except as a charlatan, as a fake, as a fraud. That's how we recognize you, and we are canceling your contract. Let the government go ahead and continue to maintain you as an asset. Let white America continue to believe somehow that you speak for the black community. That's their problem. But the masses of people must begin this process of canceling these contracts, these portfolios that these people are running around with, transacting business in your name, and profiting mightily by it. But only for themselves. Only for themselves. And so here is yet another young life terminated viciously. And all it served as, and all this whole thing was about, was again increasing the political and economic currency of the key players involved. That's all it was. If they were sincere, we would have had a torrent of legal files and a huge legal battle shaming the government. But the government has the advantage because we have underqualified and cowardly people willing to play ball for their own interests, even standing, I call them what I saw them as, collectors of bones. They can't wait till the next vicious murder of a young black man occurs. Gives them another chance, another point of entry into the national consciousness via a blatantly stupid media. Now, I want to just link this for a moment to the larger question. It's not about them in the end. It really isn't about them. The history books are filled with this kind of betrayal and this kind of treachery. We see it all the time. The question really is, this is our responsibility, and it is proof that we are not doing our job. We're not doing the job. We are parties to the lie and the charade and the injustice. I was there. the only member of the press there. When Eric Holder, then the head of the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department, young man on his way up, surrounded, supported, actually. And it was a very interesting dynamic. Here are the African parents of Amadou Diallo, the African leaders of the community, the African chiefs. And we had the African-American toadies on the other side, exhibiting classic class and cultural prejudices. Yes, they're not there to support the families and the chief's demand for justice in the shooting death of Amadou Diallo. They're there to support Eric Holder. They're there as the buttresses for the Clinton administration. We're here to support him. And what does he say? Oh, we'll take a look at this. Of course, this is a very serious matter. And yes, you have our condolences and all of the petty stuff that you hear from, growing up as I did in a colonial country. This is the same thing, same attitude. The talented tenth of African Americans are there to assure the not-so-talented Africans that justice will prevail and that they have every interest in making sure that justice prevails. Well, justice didn't prevail, and they knew exactly why they were there. They were there to buttress and surround Eric Holder as the administration's representative to the black communities, and they were not about to take on New York City and the police department, and the governor. Not at all. They were there to pontificate and to put on a show. And so it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. No justice for Amadou Diallo. And if there could be no justice for Amadou Diallo with Eric Holder there as the guy who could make this happen in a situation that clearly called for it, why would we think that Eric Holder now is about to deliver justice in Ferguson for Michael Brown? At the time, Eric Holder was on his way in, on his way up. Now he's on his way out. And it is the murder of two young black men, one African and one African-American. And in both instances, he saw to it that the result is the same. And we are here running around, acting like, oh, well, it's unfortunate. He did give it a good try. Look, he put out a report, and he said dogs were biting people in Ferguson. We ought to be grateful he did something. And, he says the standard, the bar for proving intent is just so high at the federal level. It is such a tricky business to prove a police officer guilty on federal charges. It is a very, very hard and really skills. You need extraordinary skill, and you need all these other circumstances to be there by reason of fate. Because mere humans couldn't achieve that kind of thing. It's elusive. It is just so rare. And then he makes it a self-fulfilling prophecy by not even trying. But look, the federal government was given this gift, again by the inadequate representation of the lawyers and with the conspiracy of Al Sharpton and people of his ilk. They handed the government what it needed. which was a defeat at the state level. They saw to it that this case could not really succeed the way it ought to have succeeded because they didn't do the work. And they had no intention of doing the work. It would cost money, and it would take time and a lot of skill. And they didn't have it on any level, as it turns out. So they were part of engineering failure at the state level. They did not confront the state. They did not demand a special prosecutor, not by asking, but by compelling that in legal battle. They didn't take on the legal battle at the state level, except calling news conferences and flapping their lips. And that was the intention. The intention was to not cause a problem for the political structure, democratic structure, in an election year where this case could have been used to torpedo their chances of success statewide, and it possibly could have had a ripple effect nationally. Oh, no, you're not going to do that. Sharpton was busy going to the White House and asking, what do you want us to do, boss? Or quiet the people? We're going to do that. Yeah, we'll have a march, and people will be out there in the sun screaming at empty concrete buildings, and they'll be out there doing all their thing, lots of signs, lots of energy, and they are going to be made to believe that they are part of the wheels of justice turning. No such thing. This was a grand illusion, a grand choreography in a macabre dance of death. All to make them look more important. All to serve the interests of the state. First thing Sharpton said to the people of Ferguson, what you need here is a political movement. Yes, which he never organized. You need a political movement, and you get that by showing up, taking your souls to the polls and vote for the Democratic Party, which handed you the problem in the first place. Yes, yes. That's what you must do. And I, your leader, will get you the results you want. And in the meantime, pass the collection plate. Yes, in the name of the Lord. And that's what we get. That's what we have for leadership. And these lawyers ought to be ashamed of themselves. They did not even put up a fight. No fight here. They don't have fight in them. But they do have an eye toward making big money. So victory, therefore, is summarily redefined. Is justice? No. It's money. We will win a big enough suit. And the only way we could win, by the way, we could win and not make much money. But if we shut up and play ball, we could win a lot of money. And you will notice that in that case and in the Eric Garner case, a consistent pattern. They will yammer at the news conferences. But there is no evidence that they are in any way intending to pose a problem to the system. They're not filing papers. They're not taking on a battle. They're not suing anybody. They're not calling anybody anything. Al Sharpton has yet to demand the governor of the state of New York in the Garner case to appoint a special prosecutor. But I'm, again, not by legal papers. They're not doing that. Not at all. So we had the same outcome there. So here is what we have, folks, and you got to wake up. From the federal level, all this struggle to put people in place, to put a black president in place, my Lord, because he's going to change things. Because things will get better, and he insists that they are, even as his attorney general is talking about dogs biting black children in Ferguson. So you are caught into this illusion of progress and power. And you're being played all the way. All the way you're being played. These people are not interested in advancing the cause. These are not in the tradition, the grand tradition of what was used, what was called race people. Race people. That would be people like Adam Clayton Powell, who talked about audacious power, taking on the system, toe-to-toe, and succeeding by strategy, skill, knowledge, and hard work. No one in Congress, even today, has yet to equal the productivity of Adam Clayton Powell, who prevailed in the most racist, in the height of the apartheid system in Congress. They don't have that kind of character. They don't have that kind of courage. They have joined the other side. These people who gave their lives for progress to ameliorate the oppression all over this country and by extension all over the world. Adam Clayton Powell was the only person who went and to the Bandung Conference. You understand that? That is an international recognition that his work spoke beyond black people and their oppression. You have people who have given their lives and their whole being to the advancement of people who are under oppression. I refer to the obscenity in Chicago, where young black boys on a team named after Jackie Robinson are being used in a very insulting political game. And the last thing anyone, including and especially Jesse Jackson and his political cohort, Rahm Emanuel, they decided, oh, we're going to support these young people because they won the national title. But in fact, they cheated. And rather than that be the issue, in order to secure the integrity of Jackie Robinson's name and everything that he did to maintain it, he's just become it's nothing. It's all right if they cheated. We're going to give them their own rings, even if the league said that they should forfeit their titles. They are our heroes. And our heroes have become a cheating team that is running this man's good name all through the mud and justifying their action when they know that the truth is everybody cheated, including the kids. They knew that what was being done was wrong. They knew that members of their team did not belong on it. They knew it. Everybody knew it. The managers of the team, the children themselves, the parents, they all knew it. But in this day of compromise for expediency, getting ahead using the same corrupted ways of the people oppressing you, that's okay. That is the goal. That is the preferred way. And you are playing with a man's life and everything that he did to maintain his honor and integrity, not for himself. Jackie Robinson was a race man. And in service of that, he endured all these indignities against him. Today we have a Jesse Jackson telling kids, telling everybody, as a whole, no problem. No problem. You cheated, well, you know, a whole bunch of people cheat, so it's okay if you cheat too. And in the meantime, they dare to hold on to this man's name as the name of their team. This is where we are, folks. This is where we are. These are the objective conditions in our lives, what we're dealing with. So, do we have it in us to say, we are not going that way? And we are not going to accept people telling us that this is the way to go in order to score victories. Because these are not victories. These are concessions. And they are concessions not even for the whole. They are concessions to satisfy the unseen arrangements made by the few. Utilizing every asset that we cherished once, our good name, our lives, our community, the health of our community, everything we cherished is out the window. It's up for negotiation. Progress is now that I have reached a point where I can use you to advance me. Yes. And so, coming back to the topic, we have a report, and we are to be grateful for the issuance of this report, this stunning report. And the report stands as the final chapter, as far as the U.S. Attorney General is concerned, as far as the President is concerned, as far as these folks representing these aggrieved families are concerned. These things are the end. Well, we disagree with the results, and you know it's unfortunate we disagree, but just the same, we now know that dogs were biting children in Ferguson, and for that we at least are grateful, because something did come out of this. Are you going to wake up and say this is not going to stand, this method of doing things, this habit now, or the modus operandi of just putting on the negotiation table the hopes and dreams and aspirations of black folks and Latinos and whoever else is suffering for private and personal gain? Are we going to be silent about it? Are we going to tolerate this level of insult, not only to us, but to our history as a people? Are we going to endorse by our silence and inaction this reprehensible kind of conduct in people who either install themselves or manage to become installed as our leaders? That's the choice, folks. That's the choice. I want to thank you so much for allowing me to bring this to your attention today. I hope it refocuses your thinking. Let me know what you're thinking, as a matter of fact. Write me at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. Again, we will try to reschedule Eva Gollinger. We have a great deal to learn from her about what's going on in Venezuela. It is very, very important that we understand that. It is a very serious situation. So thank you so much for being with me today. I always cherish being with you. And stay tuned. Keep it right here on PRN.FM. We have a wonderful program coming up next, Eric Davis with The Expanding Mind. And of course, you know, I really cherish the mind. The mind is our greatest asset. Take care. We'll see each other tomorrow. A pleasure and a great, great privilege to be in your company.